Hi, Patrick Cox here with more Icelandic. This time, will Icelandic survive the onslaught of globalization? Some say no.
I think Icelandic is not going to last. I think we will probably in this century adopt English as our language. I think so.
Others are more optimistic.
I mean, more people are actually using writing and speaking in Icelandic now than ever. I would just go to ordinary people and ask them, do you feel like a foreigner in your language? Would you rather be speaking English? And I think the answer is always no.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Now, at the start of this podcast, I said more Icelandic because this is the second of two podcasts on the language. If you didn't hear the first one, it was about what makes Icelandic so extraordinary, so much of an outlier when it comes to language evolution. The language has changed far more slowly than most languages do. The pronunciation has changed a lot, but everything else, the words, the grammar, the alphabet, the changes have been micromanaged by the Icelandic people. You could almost say the lack of change has been micromanaged. Evolution in most languages takes place when migrants arrive or there's trade with another country. Icelandic, though, it hasn't really changed that way, until recently anyway. When Icelanders have needed a word to describe something new, telephone, television, podcast, they resist importing the word from another language and instead look back to the Icelandic sagas, another literature written down in the 13th and 14th centuries. They look for words that have fallen out of use, and then they recycle them, combine them with other words, and create new modern meanings. And meanwhile, the grammar of Icelandic has remained far more complex than its Scandinavian siblings. Icelanders are tremendously proud of their archaically complex grammar. It sets them apart. So that was part one of Icelandic. Today, what happens to an archaic language when globalization takes place? And what's at stake? What would the Icelandic people lose if they lost the unique quality of their language, or even the language itself? Here's a window on that question. Zuzana Stankovičeva is from Slovakia. For the past few years, she's lived in Reykjavik, studying the Icelandic language. Pretty early on, she sensed that Icelanders had strong feelings about their language. So, for her master's thesis, she devised a survey to test this. She asked Slovaks and Icelanders to define their nationality. Most of the Slovaks said,
I am Slovak because my parents are Slovak.
Or because I was born in Slovakia. Ties to the land. Family ties.
With the Icelanders, the language came up very often the first position. I am Icelandic because I speak Icelandic.
The language means that much. Most adult Icelanders recall learning this song at school. It's called Land, Nation and Tongue. The poem it's based on was written in 1952 when Iceland was a brand new nation.
Land, nation and tongue was a divine trinity. Not the divine trinity, but on a similar level as that.
Linguist Ari Potel Christensen says this was the patriotic belief instilled in him as a child. The country was nothing without its language.
If we lost the Icelandic language, there would be no Icelandic nation, and if there is no Icelandic nation, there is no Icelandic sovereignty.
Iceland only won full sovereignty during World War II. The Divine Trinity was finally in place. But almost immediately, there was a challenge to the language, though it wasn't recognized at the time. It came in the form of 40,000 U.S. troops who were stationed in Iceland during the war. The U.S. military didn't completely leave until 2006. By then, most Icelanders spoke fluent English alongside their native tongue.
English is everywhere now, from the moment we wake up until we die.
I think Icelandic is not going to last.
Jón Gnarr is a former mayor of Reykjavik.
I think we will probably in this century adopt English as our language. I think so.
Really? I mean, I imagine there would be a lot of Icelanders who would be extremely worried about that, that they would see the language as an absolute central part of national identity and their own identity.
Yes, it is. But I think it's unavoidable.
It's the usual story. Urbanization, air travel, satellite TV, the internet. Every nation has been changed by these things, but Iceland more so, more quickly. Gone was the isolation that had done so much to protect the language.
When I was growing up, very few people spoke English. With my generation and with television and music, it became necessary to understand English. And now with, for instance, in the case of my children, they speak much better English than I do. And most of their activity, for instance, on Facebook is in English because they have friends in different countries. So they express themselves in English, but they don't speak as good Icelandic as I do. So it's drastic change in a very short time.
Language purists, and there are many in Iceland, they believe that the best chance for survival would be to resist importing words from English and to hang on to the language's archaic and complicated grammar. That, after all, is what makes Icelandic unique. If it ends up sounding like other languages, then people would be less inclined to value it. That's the argument.
I think that people are, especially older people, I think, are very skeptical of the use of English.
This is Larissa Kaiser, an American who lives in Reykjavik and studies Icelandic.
I think there's a big push to make people proud of it as a language. The after-school program where I work has all these posters up on the wall now that are, you know, Icelandic is our mother tongue. And I had a teacher who would ask her children, she said that they could swear all they wanted as long as they used Icelandic swear words.
Nothing like the promise of transgression to get kids interested. So where is Icelandic headed? There are several possibilities. Here are two. The first draws on Icelanders' reverence for storytelling, from the sagas of old to the extraordinary number of writers today. Some linguists believe that the tipping point for Icelandic, the moment that it might truly leave the hearts of Icelanders, would be when the country's poets and novelists stop writing in Icelandic. Sverrir Norland has some experience of this.
There wasn't really any plan.
No plan at all. He just wanted to improve his writing. So the young Icelander left his home country for a creative writing course in London.
And for obvious reasons, I had to write in English.
First, it felt fake, then liberating, which reminded him of a quote attributed to Björk, the musician.
She said something like, "When I first started singing in English, I felt like I was lying." And that's a terrible thing, but at the same time, it's beautiful. You can be whomever you want to be.
Like, you don't have to be Icelandic anymore. Norland didn't go that far. In fact, he's writing in Icelandic again these days. But would he ever write more fiction in English? Not out of the question, he says. And he's not alone in thinking that. So that's the first possibility, that more writers may switch to English, sending a powerful message to their readers in Iceland. Here's the second possibility, and it's a rosier picture. Immigration may give Icelandic a boost. In this restaurant, in the tiny town of Fludir, on the other side of a mountain range from Reykjavik, Azib Karsai roasts coffee beans on an open flame. Karsai co-owns this restaurant. She's from Ethiopia. Her native tongue is Amharic.
How do you say that?
Yibigtus. Yibigtus.
Karsai has lived in Iceland for 7 years.
I'm more Icelandic perfect, not English.
So you're better at Icelandic than English?
Yeah.
You're probably the only Amharic speaker who is better at Icelandic than English.
Yeah.
Icelanders admire immigrants who've mastered their language. But at the same time, traditionalists worry that non-native speakers may alter Icelandic. If that's the case, bring it on, says another Icelandic novelist, Oyther Ava Olafsdottir.
I'm looking very much forward to the time when immigrants start to write literature in their vision of Icelandic, their understanding of creating new words. And that's how language should be, alive, creative, inventive.
Just like the language of the sagas many centuries ago, says Olafsdottir. She, by the way, is fluent in several languages, but says she would only ever write in her mother tongue.
I think the world needs stories told in Icelandic.
Which is just what Olafsdottir does. I've read one of her novels. It's called Butterflies in November. It really is an Icelandic tale. Funny, sad, not at all sentimental, but epic. Or maybe mock epic. You feel the influence of the sagas. I can't attest to how much of all of this has to do with it being written in Icelandic. I read an English translation.
Well, what's so interesting about languages is that you can't translate everything. For instance, we have got this word in Icelandic, skárri, and it you can only translate it as better in English. But in fact, it means that you're confronted to, you're in a situation confronted to two bad choices, two bad options. But one of it is slightly better. And that is something that happens often in the, it's part of our mentality. It happens often, you can find this in the old literature, that the heroes are confronted to something, some difficulties, something that might be fatal, and there is one option that is slightly better, skárri.
I suppose the English equivalent here would be the lesser of two evils, but we don't have a single word for it. It doesn't mean that much to us. It doesn't figure as predominantly as skárri. It's a nice example of how writing in Icelandic may better help convey what it is to be Icelandic. Sverre Norland, the writer who was briefly writing in English but now is back writing in Icelandic, he looks at this in a slightly different way.
I mean, if I'm telling a story in Icelandic, I'm thinking about Icelandic people, Icelandic readers, and I'm kind of assuming that they share a similar background and they have the same kind of knowledge about the stuff I'm talking about. But if I'm writing in English about Icelandic people, I would be explaining all kinds of different things, and, you know, so it just turns out very differently, I think.
So that leaves the language in the care of Icelanders for sure, but also with the increasing cohort of foreigners in Iceland, people like Larissa Kaiser, learning this not altogether useful, tiny language and raising eyebrows.
What happens when you tell people back in the United States what you're doing?
Well, because it's Iceland, because it's Icelandic, people are generally really interested that I'm here and I'm doing this. The language side people kind of regard as kind of crazy, but it seems like a, I think sometimes it seems like a very romantic adventure. So mostly it's been a very positive response.
I don't know now, but I imagine that some people might even think of Icelandic as being something that people don't speak anymore.
Yeah, I think it's, in some ways, I think people's closest association, and this is a generalization, but people think of Elvish, for instance, and J.R.R. Tolkien, and it seems like this mystical language that no people in real life don't actually speak, or it's a very small amount of people, obviously. So it's clear that I'm not doing this for practical reasons in terms of, like, communicating with a large group of people, which is both good and bad.
A big thanks to Larissa Kaiser and all the other people who patiently, very patiently, put up with all my questions. They all had fascinating things to say. I wish I could have included more of that here, but I gotta go. And in its own way, this Icelandic pod, it's been quite a saga. I'll post pictures of many of the people I spoke with in Iceland. That'll be at pri.org/language. You can also get there via the World in Words page on Facebook. I'll make sure that I link to the previous podcast that I did in Icelandic. If you want to contact me, the best way is via Twitter. I tweet under the name Patri Cox, PatriCox. This song is by Sigur Rós, the magnificent Sigur Rós, from Iceland, of course. The lyric, it concerns someone who has visions of a little elf staring at him. A very Icelandic image, sung in Icelandic. Thanks for listening. I'll be back soon.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.